our speaker tonight, Don G, or Home Groovers Greenwood from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, everyone. My name is Don Gallagher, and I am an alcoholic. You could probably tell I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I haven't been able to get rid of the accent quite yet. My home group is the Greenwood Group. It meets twice a day, Monday through Sunday. I have a sponsor who knows that she's my sponsor. And I sponsor a lot of women in the program of recovery as outlined in this book. And God separated me from alcohol on January 14, 2007. And for that, I will be forever, ever grateful. So now that I got that out of the way, I'm in the woods, which is absolutely amazing. And when we pulled into the parking lot, you know, I looked at the little white building and then I looked at the little thing over here and I'm like, Carol, I think that I'm talking in the woods. And I want to thank Carol for taking the trip. We left this morning. We hit Doylestown. I know Ron, real good people. And I can honestly say that I absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, love my God of my understanding, and I love being sober. And that wasn't always the case. There's been a lot of work that's been taking place these last 10 years going through this book. And, you know, this is not my first time on the rodeo. It is not. The first time I ever came to Alcoholics Anonymous was back in 1991. I came from a great family in Brooklyn, New York. I am Irish, Spanish, and Sicilian. I never fit into Brooklyn. I always wanted to be someplace else, doing someone else, you know, from a young age. You know, as I'm walking through this parking lot, I realized that at the age of 8 years old, with no alcohol in my system, my mother had sent me up to Girl Scout camp. I didn't like the woods. I didn't like the tent. I didn't like the counselors, the crickets, the lake, the grass. And so I left at 8 years old. Restless, irritable, discontent from the get-go. I believe that I was born an alcoholic, you know. And, you know, I wouldn't stop for many years. But for me, alcoholism is a disease, you know. It's a hopeless state of mind and body. And I didn't understand that for a very, very long time. So, you know, I grew up in a crazy Gallagher family, a lot of drinking involved in my family. I knew at a young age what alcohol did to a person. I knew what it was like being on the receiving end of someone who drank to blackout. I understood what it was like to take care of this person, make sure they didn't fall asleep with a cigarette in their hand, make sure they didn't leave the stove on, made sure that they didn't lock, you know, left the front door unlocked. I knew at a very young age what that was like. And I swore to God that I was never going to be like this person. And that's exactly what I turned into. You know, growing up, I went to I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I bet you can tell. 4 of those years was all-girl Catholic school, which was really against my will. You know, about 2 weeks ago, I actually went to my high school reunion. And I was in a catering hall with 600 cackling women. It was horrendous. I was sober, you know. And as I'm sitting there with the class of 82, I'm listening to the stories that they're talking about, you know, about teachers, about experiences, you know. And I'm just listening. My mind's quiet. I'm taking it in. And I realize that I didn't know what they're talking about, you know, and I never missed a day of school. And on top of that, I wasn't drinking yet. Freshman, sophomore, junior year, I didn't drink. I lived in a brownstone with my entire extended family in one building. I don't know what you know, but that's like, that's what your grandparents on the first floor, your aunt and uncle and your cousins on the second floor, your mom, your dad, your brothers and sisters on one of four. The entire neighborhood, like you see in the movies, is how it was back in the 70s. You could not leave the block without some grandmother calling your grandmother, and before you could get home, she'd be like, so you're up the block smoking cigarettes, you know? It was always something. But despite that, you know, as I'm sitting in this catering hall 2 weeks ago, I realized something amazing. And that's why I love this program. I realized that I was suffering from untreated alcoholism way before I picked up a drink. My mind was screaming, and I had no idea. But let's go back to when alcohol did work. So I'm hanging out in the schoolyard. We're cracking open Heineken bottles with our teeth. We're hanging out. We got the boombox. You know, we got Donna Summer on the radio. And I'm hanging out. I'm a homegirl, you know. I don't know how I was a homegirl because I was always looking to fit in. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be a part of. And I'll never forget the first time I drank. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. I wasn't nervous. I was calm. I felt peaceful. And I would chase that for a lot of years. Almost didn't finish high school, so it was fast. My senior year, I almost didn't finish high school. I was in college for 10 years. 10 years, you know? Never gave it a second thought of what my mother, you know, that she was paying, working all these hours, paying for my college tuition. Never thought about anyone or anything. I loved to drink, you know? And as I got older, my brothers and I, we'd go to the bars. The Gallagher boys would get into trouble. I'd look out of the corner of my eye. The two of them were getting beat up. I'd pick a chair, crack it over your head, started to bartend. And I'm the kind of lady that when I drink, I'm very violent. And I don't know if anyone can identify with that. I love scotch. Like a lot. Like with no ice cubes. Because it ruins the taste. Yeah, I had a loaded gun behind my bar. I wouldn't hesitate putting it to your brain and say, just blink. Please just blink. It felt like I had power. So there I am in Manhattan bartending. I got the power behind the bar. You did what I said. I love, and I love the way they talk about it in the big book. You know, I'm like the director running the show. If I didn't like you, you didn't drink at the bar. You know, and I bartended for 6.5 years. And today what I realized is that My drinking life is a lifestyle. I gravitated towards the people that were doing the same thing that I was doing. And if you were doing something different, I picked it up. If you were disrespectful, if you were rude, if you were obnoxious, if you were entitled, if you stole, I joined you. I didn't understand the other people. Blackouts were very frequent. Like I said, I couldn't get my butt to school, to college, to save my life. I had every intention between one class and the other class of going to school. But once I ordered that first drink, it was like all bets were off. By the time I'm 20 years old, I'm in an abusive relationship with a man. I'm bartending in the South Street Seaport. I'm seeing another guy on the side, and yes, I know this is being taped, because I got no secrets today. And I remember having a fight with Jackie Pinnell. I'll never forget that. I'm in a blackout, I'm in the middle of York Avenue with traffic going by, and I'm fighting with him. I fought with everyone. And next thing I know, some cops were kindly trying to restrain me, and I didn't let them. And so they got a little bit more forcible. And so I punched them in the face. I didn't think twice about it. Next thing I know, I'm in a padded cell in a straitjacket in Bellevue, and I'm 20. And I don't think I have a drinking problem. My mother thought, since I grew up in this crazy family, I hid my drinking pretty well. I needed psychiatry. So I went to a psychiatrist. And God bless her soul. And like it says in our book, I never told her the whole truth. I remember one time she said to me, "So, do you drink a couple?" And I'm like, "Yeah, a couple." She thought I meant a couple of a week. I meant a couple an hour. Never true with anybody, you know. She gave me some antidepressants because I was depressed, you know. But if you drank the way I drank, you'd be depressed too. So fast forward to 26. I'm 26 years old. I don't know how to drive a car. I'm not graduated from college. I'm in debt from all the years of not going to college. I'm losing bartending job after bartending job because at this time, at 8 o'clock in the morning, I do have to drink. And I was doing other substances so I could function during the day. And that's how I was living my life. I could no longer afford to support myself. And so where do people like me go when you're in a situation like that? So I went to mom's house. And believe me, she didn't want me home. I lasted about 2 months. I came home in a blackout. I'm stumbling up the stairs. And she looked at me straight in the eye and she said, Dawn Marie, have you been drinking? And I'm like, the millionth lie, I don't know what you're talking about. She says, well, you either stop your drinking or you get the hell out of my house. And 2 days later, I was on my way to a treatment center. And the only reason why I went was because I was filled with self-centered fear. Where would I live? Who would take care of me? Who would put a roof over my head, food on the table? And so I went. I get out 32 days later. They told me about you people and Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me a meeting list and they said, the minute you get out, go to meetings. Go to meetings. Make friends. And so that's what I did. I went to meetings. I got a sponsor. I saw the steps on the wall. I kind of not did them. I kind of not read the big book. You know, it's like being a Boy Scout and not reading the manual. But who knew? I mean, really, I, at that point in time, thought that alcohol was my problem because I drank too much. So remove the alcohol and life will get better. That was what I was under the assumption. And so I went to meeting. I met a lot of old timers. Don't drink. Go to meetings. It'll get better. And the truth of the matter is, it did get better. Because when I'm not passed out, blacked out, I show up. I show up to a job. I don't show up nice, but I show up to a job, you know. And that's what I did. I went to a lot of meetings. I got a sponsor. I fellowshipped my way. I went to all the AA dances. And basically, after a couple of years, I mean, you people were my higher power, and I didn't know it. I did get to do something very incredible. I got to get into hospitality, into hotel management. I loved it. I love being the center of attention to this day, you know, but not to the extreme back then, you know. So I got into hotels. You know, I wasn't drinking. I'd work 10, 12 hours, get out, go to a meeting, fellowship, go to my sponsor's house, and pass out exhausted the next day. And life got better. I got out of debt. I graduated college. I got the car. You know, but what I didn't realize was that alcoholism was just waiting. I was a ticking time bomb. And I didn't even know it. So I had an opportunity to go live on a tropical island. It sounds really good, right? They talk about that in the big book, too. Not a cloud on the horizon, right? Not a cloud in the sky. The end of a perfect day. Are you with me? You know, it's perfect. I got the condo. I got the car. I married a Belgian tennis professional, you know, husband now. You know, I like, see, this is the thing about me. I'm the kind of alcoholic that I need your validation. I need your validation. I need your approval. And if I don't, I'll try harder, you know? And so I have this little thing I call a trophy closet. And it's inside of me. And I collect things. I'll collect your husband, your wallet, your job promotion, whatever I think will make you guys like me better. And I didn't even know that I was doing that either. So I'm at a wedding with my ex-husband now at this point in time. But we're sitting there. And they're passing around the champagne. And I said to him, I can't drink that. That's alcohol. And he said, this is not alcohol. This is champagne. And so there I am, at 3 months shy of 7 years, never having done the steps as outlined in our book, suffering from untreated alcoholism, with no higher power in my life, managing my own show. I was unable to recall with sufficient force the suffering and humiliation of 7 years ago. And I said, why not? I'll just come back to you people tomorrow. I was to come back for the next 9 years. And it got real bad. Not so fast. I drank for 36 hours straight. You know, I got that ease and comfort that I didn't know that I was missing. I tried to go to meetings while I was there. I decided at one point in time, you know, the problem is Puerto Rico. It's too sunny, it's too bright, and everyone's short, you know? I always came up with an excuse of why I couldn't stop again. I was going to the meetings, you know? So what did I do? I divorced the Belgian guy, hooked up with a guy from Amsterdam. Next thing I know, ik woon in Amsterdam. So now I'm in Amsterdam, right? And it's amazing how I manage my life to places that I think are going to bring me happiness. When I get over there, I'm going to be happy. 3 years in Amsterdam, I learned about the Heineken factory. I speak a little Dutch. And the progression, they talk about the progression. My blackouts were longer. I got into all kinds of compromising situations. And then I got this great idea. If I just get back to Brooklyn and sit in the same meeting and get the same sponsor, I'm going to be struck sober. So I came back to the United States in 2002, did exactly what I thought, and I couldn't stop. So where I was able to white knuckle 10 months and 8 months and 6 months and 3 months and 2 months and 1 month, 15 days. At the end of my drinking, I could not keep the alcohol down for 2 days. By this time, I'm 20 pounds thinner. I still have the nice job, apartment. And I didn't feel so good, you know. But here's how God works, and I love God. That's what I'm here to talk about today. There was this girl who I had sponsored back in the 90s. And I did told her exactly what was taught to me. Don't drink, go to meetings. And don't drink and go to meetings. And for 12 years, she did not drink and she went to meetings. She was the most restless, irritable, miserable, saddest looking person you'd ever come across. And she was 12 years not drinking. You know, you asked her, how you doing today? She'd be like, or she'd be complaining about something. I mean, you could count on it. And one day, because I never stopped coming to you people, I wanted what you had. Because I did see people in the rooms with their eyes bright. You know? And I ran into the meeting and I saw her and she looked amazing. Indescribable. Her eyes were bright. Her shoulders were back. She had this serene look on her face. And so here comes Dawn. So I yelled at her, what are you doing? You got a new boyfriend? She's like, no. I said, you got a job promotion. She's like, no. I said, you hit the lotto. She's like, no. I said, what are you doing? And then she told me the craziest thing. Someone from Staten Island had taken her through the 12 steps as outlined in our book. And she found God. So I back up, you know, because this cannot be the answer. She found God, you know, and I had a little problem with God back then. And I kept relapsing and kept relapsing for the last 6 months. I kept seeing her at the meetings. And on January 13, 2007, she invited me to her birthday party. And she said, Dawn, why don't you come? You know, I could barely get out of bed by this time. She loved me unconditionally. That's what I loved about the people that have recovered. You love us unconditionally, whether we're broken or we're not. You love us unconditionally. So I was on my way to the R train. I had the gift. I was dressed up. And suddenly the tractor beam at O'Keefe's Bar and Grill pulls me in sideways. That mental obsession they talk about in the book. I never made it to her party. Instead, the next morning I wake up and I'm covered in blood. And I thought I had been stabbed. And it dawns on me that now I am vomiting blood from the amount of alcohol I had been drinking over God knows how many years. And so I did what I always did in the past. I'm ashamed. I'm guilty. I clean up the mess, right? I got to put it all back together. Clean up the mess and hope things will get better. And that's the day God entered my life for real and forever, you know? The phone rang. And I don't know about you people, but when I'm in that kind of condition, hungover, sick, just finished throwing up blood, I'd let that go to voicemail. But I didn't. I picked up the phone and it was Elder. And she didn't bawl me out to say, why didn't you come to my birthday party? She asked me two questions. She said, Dawn, are you okay? I said, Elda, I'm dying and I can't stop. And the second question is, can I help you? And I said, please. And I have goosebumps. Because I was tired. I was so tired. I was tired of feeling the way I was feeling. I was tired of waking up with the shakes, the DTs, you know, this book. I love this book. She says, great, get the book. I'm coming over. 2 days later, she shows up at my house. She goes, okay. And I love that you do the set-aside prayer. I love that. She taught me the lay-aside prayer. Same prayer, you know? We started right away. She says, Dawn, do you know what your problem is? And see, back then I was very cocky, arrogant, dismissive, know-it-all. So I looked at her and I'm like, yeah, sure, I know what's wrong with me. I drink too much. She goes, that is not your problem. I said, well, what's my problem? She goes, you're selfish and self-centered. And I looked at her, I go, that's impossible. I'm in hospitality, you know? I thought because I was in hospitality and saying, hi, welcome, hi, can I get you a cup of coffee? I thought I was nice and kind and patient and loving. And she told me, you are not. She said, you have never done anything for anybody else ever without having expectations of getting something in return. Either that's outside validation or my favorite, my personal favorite, you will owe me. I'll show up for you, you'll show up for me when I call. She goes, alcohol is your solution. You know, presently. We're going for a new solution, you know. And then she taught me about the set-aside prayer. Please, God, set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease. The big book, you know, because she said to me, you know what, Dawn, you've been coming around since 1991. You know enough about Alcoholics Anonymous to be a downright danger to yourself and to others. So I suggest you shut it. See, I'm one of those tough kind of girls. You got to tell me to mind my business and shut my mouth. Because otherwise I think I know what I'm doing. You know, and then we went, you know, it was amazing. When we were going through the preface, that's when I realized I didn't know anything. You know, thought alcohol was my problem, found out I was the problem, you know, didn't know that I was suffering from a hopeless state of mind and body, didn't know that when I straighten out spiritually, I'm going to straighten out mentally and physically. No clue. Had no idea that Bill Wilson lived at 182 Clinton Street and I passed his house every day going to grammar school. I knew nothing. I mean, literally nothing. And that was very refreshing. Because she goes, Dawn, you know what? Why don't you pretend you've never been to Alcoholics Anonymous? You've never been to a meeting. You don't know what the big book is. And you have no idea what the program of recovery was. She talked about the three sides of the triangle. She talked about the recovery, the 12 step, that is going to address where the disease centers in my mind. You know? She goes, are you willing to surrender to your innermost self that you're alcoholic? I did that when I picked up the phone. When I realized that every which way that I tried to stop wasn't good enough. That my way really wasn't working. You know? She talked about service. She talked about unity. She talked about when all these three sides of the triangle, when action... Who knew this was a spiritual program of action? I didn't know that either. I wanted to know when the next dance was, you know? Amazing. Amazing what I've learned over the last couple of years. Or just within that first year. And I was teachable. I was teachable. And here's the reason why. I saw a change in her. I saw a change sufficient enough to... She was a different person. It gave me hope. It gave me hope for the first time. 9 years dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with untreated alcoholism. And no one running up to me saying, you know what? The solution is in this book. Can I take you through it? Can I teach you? We go through the preface. We go through the doctor's opinion. Love the doctor's opinion. That poor guy, you know? I love the line it says, among most doctors and professionals, the consensus is that we are doomed, you know? You got to love that word, doomed, you know? Then he talked about moral psychology, you know? Better known as spiritual experience. He couldn't say it back then, but, you know, that's what he was talking about. Old ideas that used to be my guiding force, pain, suffering, fight, resentment, anger, are going to be replaced by a new set of principles. Who would have known? I knew nothing. So excited. So excited. Bill Wilson, we go through his story, you know, and I could identify. I identified with everything, you know. The geographic, the running around. That not being able to take exam because my hand is shaking, or better yet, not being able to take an exam because I don't even show up, you know? The last 8 pages of his story when he talks about how Ebbie Thatcher with 2 months, 60 days, brought the message of hope and recovery to him, you know? And how it was sufficient enough. In fact, this woman that took me through 10 and a half years ago, I was her first girl. We go on a lot of speaking commitments together, and sometimes I think we're like Bill and Bob, you know? I was her first girl. After she got transformed, 6 months later, the two of us are opening the book. You don't have to be too smart to do this stuff, you know? You just have to do it. It's amazing. God takes care of the rest. That first step, that unmanageability, I had no idea. I thought my problem, oh, okay, so if you have the mental obsession, but here's the thing, if you have the physical allergy, right, when you want to stop, you honestly can't, right? Or when you do have one, you can't stop, you might be one of us. That much I knew. But see here, I didn't know why I was going out for 9 years. She goes, it's the mental obsession. Your mind is screaming, you know? And these steps were designed to get you to a God of your understanding. Basically, Elda told me I need a Drano. That's what she told me. We got to gut you, Dawn. Sounds exciting, right? Gut job. The unmanageability. You know, page 52. The bedevilment. You know, the nuns warned me about the devil back in school, you know. Who would have knew it was in me, you know? Right? You pray to, are you having problems with relationships? Anybody? Right? Pray to misery and depression? Financial difficulties? A sense of uselessness? Any takers? Unmanageability. I manage my life into a hole. And I'm going like this, you know? Just listening and understanding and reading and doing the morning meditation. For those of you who do not meditate, okay, don't. But if you want to get high, start plugging in. You know, sometimes I say to my sponsors, my sponsees, would you ever go to sleep and not plug in your cell phone? They're like, what are you, crazy? Yet I'll go to bed and not plug into the source. It's the same kind of insanity, right? A lot of insanity. The unmanageability, you know, that restless, irritable, discontent. You know, that's the first sign that you might be suffering from something that only a spiritual experience can conquer. Whoa! How do we get to this God? You know, sanity. Insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Not only, and then the fact that I don't have a mental defense against the first drink. I have a mental defense against jumping in front of a speeding train, putting my hands on a hot stove. I truly, truly believe to the bottom of my toes when it comes to alcohol and other substances, all bets are off. I got that. I understand that. But that alone is not enough to keep me sober. I got to move forward, you know? I'm looking for this power greater than myself that will restore me to sanity. And she said the magic is in the steps. You know, we go through it, agnostic. I was lucky. I just had to change my concept of God. It took the cruel part away, the punishing part. I made my own third step prayer. You know, I wrote down the qualities that I thought God would possess to hang out with me. Sometimes he curses to get my attention for a fact, you know. I need to be stopped sometimes. I can go, you know? But we get up to how it works, and it was different this time. So meanwhile, in my life, my father's dying of cancer, and my grandmother's 94 years old. And these are the two most important people in my life ever. And I know that they're not going to be here much longer. And one of my prayers to God was, please don't let me be drunk at their funeral. Please let me show up to them as much as I can today. So my life got very, very simple. I love when it talks about, you know, A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own life. Check. That no human power could relieve our alcoholism. Check. And that God could and would if he were sought. Well, what does this mean? Today, what it means for me is I work for God. And he gives me a little manual. And he wants me to be kind and loving and patient and tolerant and forgiving. Easier said than done. Because it's not my go-to. It's not my go-to. You know, I don't know if it's because I lived so many years before being entitled, nasty, and belligerent, or what the deal is, but, you know, and they talked about the director, right? I was a banquet maitre d'. I ran the lights and the shows, trust me, you know. You did what I wanted you to do, constantly putting expectations on others. And when you didn't live up to them, I got pissed. See, but I don't stop it there. I relive it over and over. I refeel everything. What a horrible way to live. You know? We get to that fourth step. And I love the way she tells me. So we think, and I'm going to get t-shirts made up. So we think your troubles are basically of your own making. I create this drama. But I don't see it. You know, and then they talk about resentment being the number one offender that it kills more alcoholics. Because it blocks me for the sunlight of the spirit. So she gets me quickly. Now, we're talking, I'm 4 months sober now. I'm working 10 and 12 hours at the hotel, and I'm doing an inventory fast. She gave me like 3 weeks. She wasn't playing with me, and you know what? I was tired. I wanted this to happen, you know, and it's amazing. I love when, and she goes, God writes the list. You don't write the list. God writes it. Stop being in your head. You know, in the prayer and meditation, the 1 minute. And like I said, if you don't know how to meditate, try shutting your mind for 1 minute. Just shut your eyes and breathe. If you were like me, it'd be something like this, you know. Now I can actually do like 20 minutes if I feel like it. But my mind is quiet. So we're going through the fourth step. She gave me all these prayers. I'm on my knees every morning doing the third step prayer. I love writing the people, places, institutions. You know the Catholic Church was on there. You know St. Xavier's High School was on there. You know all those things were on there. My mother, my father. It's so easy. I'm mad at the world, but I don't have to put the world down on it. Not that selfish, right? But I am. But I did the list. And then I found out, I love that third column, affected. You people affect me. In fact, you go one step further than that, you dominate me. And you're not even in the room or on the block. And I probably haven't seen you in 10 years. Yet you're in my mind. Right? The resentment. And it's got to go. Love that fourth column, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done us. We resolutely look for my own mistake. I had no idea I was selfish and self-seeking. I don't, back then, I didn't cut people slack. I had this motto, you screw me, I'll screw you three times, and then I want you to know I did it to you. How's that? Not very godly, right? Get this down, do the fear inventory. I'm afraid of everything, always have been. Not so much today. God's amazing. The sex conduct inventory, did that one too. Found out I torture you guys, and then some, right? But I don't see it. It's like jealousy, bitterness. But I'm nice, you know. This is what my mind is, but you're so nice. You're in hospitality. Get to the fifth step. And it's amazing. Because, you know, it talks about, you know, you're going to have a new opening with God. You're going to be nearer to your creator. You're going to feel great. I felt like crap, right? Because she's given me a list of my character defects. And they're on there. I'm fearful, nasty, unforgiving. Selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, delusional, backstabbing. One of my favorites, dismissive. I don't have time for you. Right? victim. Poor me. Oh, if you people would just do what I want you to do, my life would not, the show would be great. The delusions of my mind, absolutely amazing. So when I got this fifth step list, these character defects, I'll be honest with you, I went in and I quit my job. I quit a 20-year career. I walked in and I realized at that point in time, first she says, you know, what's the opposite of all these character defects and principles? I hadn't a clue. In fact, I was becoming aware of them for the very first time in my life. I had no idea that that's what I practiced in my life, in all my affairs. Never mind what the opposite of it. So I walked in, you know, and I launched. And I love the fact that the name of the group is Feet First, because I was body, feet, body, head. The whole thing was in. I was ready to do this deal to its entirety and complete it. I didn't want to be that person. Who is this person? This is me? 6 and 7. Love it, love it, love it. You know, I'm sit quietly for an hour. I sat quiet for an hour. I did not like what I saw. I had to believe that a power greater than myself could fix me. Because, you know, when she said you're going to have to be, what is it, patient, kind, loving? Love and tolerance is our code. It's like, you know? Makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Like, I'm a tough girl. I don't need patience. Kind, helpful, thoughtful. Oy. Ooh. Yeah, but it's, you know, two alternatives, right? Two doors. My friend Paulie D says, you know, if you work the steps off the wall, you have an off the wall program. And then he always tells me, there's no door number three. It's one door. Keep being who you want to be, practicing those old principles, drinking, doing whatever you need to block out your existence. Door number two, seek spiritual help. Ask for help. Ask for help. 6 and 7, I know I can't fix me. Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I didn't even know there was a 7-step prayer until it was taught to me. Something I say daily. 3rd step, 7th step. I love it. Prayer, meditation, on my knees. 8th step. She had the list. She added some more people that I harmed. People I didn't resent, but that I harmed. You know? And then I launched. I went. I had to make flashcards. She's like, Dawn, you'll get off topic. Write this stuff down, you know? What are you making amends for, right? You're going to try to be who God created you to be before you ripped the steering wheel out of his hand and drove God knows where. Threw God in the back of the bus. Go ahead, God, I'll drive. I got this. Oh. Time after time, I saw that didn't work. My amends were amazing. You know, family members, they knew I was sick. You know, my grandmother. You know, meanwhile, my grandmother, my father's dying of cancer. I'm taking my dad to the beach all the time. I'm talking with him. I'm trying to make amends to him. He's like, I don't want to hear it, Dawn. You are the best thing that's ever happened to me. You don't need to say I'm sorry. My relationship with my mother, amazing. They forgave me. Imagine that. There are people out there that forgive. Not me. I hold on to it, right? I got to hold on to it. I got to clear up a lot of wreckage, return money. Some ex-boyfriends didn't want to hear from me. I'll just be honest, don't ever call me again. It is what it is, you know? And I kept going through the work with Elda. You know, those promises, it's so funny. They read the promises back home. And I love the way they read it at a beginner's meeting. And I thought you're supposed to get it the minute you stop drinking. I had no idea. They called the 9-step promises for a reason, you know? And I lived those today. Gave me hope, but it was a lot of hard work. 10-step. Continue, 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 continue. You know, am I supposed to continue? I think so. I have it circled, you know? Being thoroughly honest. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when these crop up, you call your sponsor. No, it doesn't say that. You go to God at once. See, God runs my show. I go to God at once. And I share it with someone if need be. And I keep on going. You know, Katie Parker used to sponsor me, and she used to say, awake and aware, Dawn Marie, awake and aware. You know, it's like, and it used to drive me crazy. You know, she goes, you have to be awake and aware of your behaviors and the effect it has on others. I remember, you know, I was very disrespectful for my mom for a lot of years. I mean, just nasty. She gave me everything. I abused her verbally all the time. I must have been about a year sober, and she's telling me, you know, she's a mom. She's a doting mom. I want you to go here. Now, if you're going to go through the Holland Tunnel, make sure you make a left at the golf station instead of going left. And I'm like, Ma, GPS, GPS. You know, but she keeps going. And I'm like, Ma, mind your business. And I'm on the phone in my car. And she says, okay, Dawn Marie. And she hangs up. See, this is the thing about getting gutted and finding a God and making those amends. Oh, you'll feel it when it goes away. You'll feel when God exits the building. You'll feel when it's like, and you're sitting there, you know, and you know you didn't do the right thing. You know. Thank God for a spiritual program of action. So I call my mom up. I said my prayer. I didn't have to call my sponsor. I said, please, God, remove my fear. Direct my attention to who you would have me be. You would not have me be this kind of daughter, right? Because when I was doing my fourth step and my fifth step, you know, if God says this is what a good daughter looks like, or a good son, or a good employee, how do I show up? Something over here, you know what I mean? That's how I show up. So I called her back and I said, Mom, what, Dawn Marie? I said, Mom, I have to apologize. I shouldn't have spoken to you in that way. I know you're only trying to help me. And I'm really, really sorry. And then she said the thing that made me stop forever. She said, that's all right, Dawn Marie. I'm used to it. And then when that hits your toes and shoots through your head into your heart, that your own mother is used to the abuse, it goes away. It's about 9.5 years. My mother could say the damnedest thing to me and I won't even blink. I'll be like, that's great, Mom. Yes, I'll go and make the right at the golf station, you know. I'll do anything she says. And this is, I'm becoming a spiritual being. You know, all those years of running around and going to the meetings, I was a human doing. Gotta do, gotta do, gotta do. Now I let God do. I put in the footwork and then God decides, you know. Love the 10th step. Get into the 11th step, you know. And at that morning, upon awakening, I look at the 24 hours ahead. I looked at the 24. I got to pick up Carol. I got to put the luggage in the car. You know, there's things that I do. But I always ask God to join me. Or better yet, I join him. I love the word co-create. You know, God's in me and I co-create with him. And he's given me Emmanuel. You know, and I make mistakes all the time. You know, when I retire at night, my favorite was I kind and loving to all. Yeah, you know, sometimes no. It's okay. I don't take myself seriously anymore. I try to learn from my mistakes. You know, I don't beat myself up like I used to. You know, I love this life. I love the people in it. I've had a rough year, you know? And then we got to 12. Now, meanwhile, it's probably I'm 7 months sober. And I'm going to 12. Nothing will ensure immunity and stupid thinking. Stinking thinking. Like intensive work with others. It works when everything else fails. So what's everything else? Going to a meeting, talking to your sponsor, going to do yoga, going for a massage, getting your nails done. When all that stuff fails, working with someone else that has this disease of alcoholism will shut your brain off because the focus is on them. I remember when I first got sober, like that first couple of weeks, I said to Elda, I said, you know, Elda, I'll just be honest, and this is the God honest truth. And I hope to God I'm keeping my promise today. I said, you know what, Elder? If the things in this book really, really, really work, and I don't feel like killing myself, and I stay sober, I will never shut up about it. I don't. I go into those meetings where the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, I fish them out one by one. I bring them into my house. I sit them across from my dining room table, line by line, page by page. I don't run their program. I tell them, I can't care more about your program than you do. It just is what it is. You know, speak in jails, institutions. I've gone and done 12-step calls. I've revived people with Narcan. This thing is, the world is broken. You know? And I'm thinking, I don't want to add to it. How's that? One of those three, I stepped out of the ring. But how many are still dying and suffering? What if Elder did not get this girl from Staten Island to take her through? And she didn't bring the message to me. I wouldn't be here. You know? Step 12 is really important to me. You know? So I'm 11 months sober, and I get to hear Chris Raymer and his brother Myers, and you know, it was the first time I ever heard anyone yingin' and yangin' from Texas. But they talked about this book and the program of recovery and how simple it was. They connected the dots. There's a great movement now happening in Brooklyn because of it. We've even formed primary purpose meetings where I'm from. And everyone's invited, you know? And it's growing, and I get to see people with their eyes alive. And, you know, I get to see a miracle. It is the greatest time to watch dead eyes and hopelessness become life, thoughtfulness, kindness. Not only in the rooms, it says my job is to be of maximum service to God and His kids. That's my job today. Everything else is secondary. For me. At 11 months sober, I got to say goodbye to my dad. I was surrounded by a lot of you people in the fellowship. I got to say goodbye to my grandmother 8 months later. Because of this program, I swear to God, I can hear them. Because my mind is quiet. There's not a lot of chatter up there. You remember the chatter. Ding, 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 ding. I don't suffer from that anymore. No wonder why people go on meds. That's crazy. Once again, when you straighten out spiritually, you will straighten out mentally and physically. When I was reading that for the first time, I did not know what that meant. I have had an experience with it. I love it. I absolutely love it. It is such a high, you know? I just want to talk about being sponsored. You know, it was a difficult year. I got separated. I'm going through a divorce. It's almost over. I'm actually amicable. We actually talk. But it took a lot of inventory to get there. I'm just saying, you know. I'm not the kind of girl you want on your bad side. Just saying. Thank God for God. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for sponsorship, for sponsees. Come on, Dawn. Let me scrape you off the floor. Let's go to a meeting. How's that? I always say to my sponsor, I'm a perfect 5. I'm not a 10. Definitely not a 1. I'm a perfect 5, you know, and the people that I've met trudging the road of happy destiny, unbelievable. I have vacations with you people. I have jumped out of planes with you people. I have ridden King Dakar with you people, you know, traveled, experienced life, buried people, celebrated life, birthdays, a lot of death. Because of the addiction affecting the country and the world today. But shoulder to shoulder, I march. I will forever be grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, but especially to that person who paid it forward. I can't stress it enough. Pay it forward. I'm going shopping tomorrow at some of your outlets. Oh, the things that go on in my head. But anyway. I just want to thank, the God of my understanding for my sobriety. I want to thank everyone and anybody who has ever helped in service, keeping the doors open, the literature, doing service, sponsorship. Forever grateful for great friends, where we don't even have to talk, we just know. Thank my home group, my sponsees. I want to thank Jeff for asking me to speak. I trust God, clean the house, and help others. God bless.